There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And welcome to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have y'all along on this Veterans Day. And we are live from Fort Whiting for the Veteran of the Year presentation and luncheon. This is going on until 2 o'clock today. Of course, had a big time at the parade today. Big thank you to everybody who came out and visited us this morning, getting the Veterans Day parade going. And now over to Fort Whiting for this event to honor the veterans, all the veterans in our area. Also to award the Veteran of the Year on our next guest, who's going to join us here in just a couple minutes, Lieutenant Colonel Frank Barrow. What a story, what a guy that continues to give back to our community and doing it through JROTC in Mobile County. And his story and his service to our nation is something. So stay tuned. He'll join us here in just a little bit. Also coming up in hour number two, more veteran interviews as we talk here at Fort Whiting for the Veteran of the Year presentation. Couple of reminders, too. Coming up tomorrow, the Fisher House presentation preceding Auburn football. Fisher House, we said before, probably the fastest way to describe what Fisher House is if you understand Ronald McDonald House and that how that helps families that have children in children's hospitals, gives them a home away from home to be nearby. Fisher House does the same thing for our veterans and their families. So we'll get the show going tomorrow for Fisher House. But today, it is Veterans Day here in Alabama, and I'm sure glad you're along. And let's do this. Reminder, too, coming up, the rest of the month of November. It is Veterans Month. We've got interviews like the one that's just about to happen here with Lieutenant Colonel Barrow, with veterans from different wars, different time frames. The people join me on Midday Mobile. All those are available if you'll go straight to or go to the website. You can do it that way, probably the fastest. Go to fmtalk1065.com, and you can get the information there. Click the interviews, find the interview, maybe listen to all of them. Check them out as we do it all month long, not just today on Veterans Day, but all month long, Veterans Month here at Midday Mobile and FM Talk 106.5. Also, before we get started, it's a Friday thing. Remember I tell you to like set an appointment for next week, do it on a Friday, get ready for next week. I do that with my buddy Trey from 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Trey does fantastic work at making junk disappear. Now, it could be a storage unit you got to clean out, a house you're getting ready to sell. Maybe it's something around the house. Holidays are here. People are going to be showing up at your place. Get the junk gone. It could be inside the house, up in the attic. It could be big stuff in the backyard, storage buildings and trampolines and swing set, whatever. You got to get it gone. Trey can handle it. And the process, really easy. Set an appointment. A good old-fashioned appointment. When you go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK, the name is the number. You'll find a day that works for you, a time that works for you, and they'll say, okay, here's the appointment time. They show up at that time. You just show them the junk you want gone. They quote you a price right there on the spot and get it done. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. When we return, Lieutenant Colonel Barrow joins us on our presentation here for Veteran of the Year, live from Fort Whiting.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And we continue our discussion of veterans on Veterans Day. And remember, all month long, it's Veterans Month here on Midday Mobile. I'd like to say hello and a very happy hello to the South Alabama Veterans Council Veteran of the Year, Lieutenant Colonel Frank Barrow. Thanks for joining me.
Very excited to be here. And
congratulations.
Well, I'm very humbled by this honor. I think that there are many people in Mobile County that certainly could have deserved, or Baldwin County, more than me. But it was a big honor when I got the call from Steve Carey that I was selected for this honor.
Well, there's a lot of people that believe you are the right person for this honor. And it is something, though, to say in the backdrop of our veterans community. You know, if we look Mobile County, Baldwin County, Northwest Florida, Southeast Mississippi, it's a robust population of veterans.
I'm very blessed, as you probably, we talked about earlier in the pre-game show, that the South continues to be a very supportive of the military in general, and a lot of our veterans come from the southeastern states. So I think that's one of the reasons why, of course, we have great weather, great food, and great beaches, and friendly people. So I think that's the other big part of it.
Having someone like you, and I'm about to go through superlatives, which y'all, that could take about 18 minutes of this show, the superlatives for Lieutenant Colonel. But before we do that, why, you said this, and I think it's true, and we talked about, you know, how different families and involvement. Why the Southeast versus other areas? Do you think there's something culturally, or?
It is a cultural part as well, but there are several things. One is the South has a tradition, and families. You've probably seen statistics. Only about 1% of America serves in the military at all today.
And that's 1%.
Only 1% of America. And that is not necessarily a good thing. We lose perspective ever since the draft stopped back in after Vietnam. And so that's a piece of it. And then culturally, the South and the Southeast, when you look at a map, it's almost like a smile that the preponderance of the military forces come from. Part of it is also that if you look at all the bases that exist, there are a lot of bases that tend to be in the South. And there's a reason for that, because the climate is conducive to training that allows training to be conducted, you know, almost year-round.
Sure.
As opposed to an extreme northern climate where that's not as necessarily as easy to do. But it is becoming an issue across America that we need representatives from Montana and Washington State and Oregon State. And there are veterans that serve from those communities. I don't want to say that they're not. But the preponderance do come from the South. And
it's this smile. Okay, I'm gonna have to Google this and look at this image. So that smile with the bottom of the smile being in the Southeast, and then the going up, I guess, to the Atlantic seaboard and coming out into the Midwest?
Correct. Okay. To the Midwest and even into California and places, because they have big populations.
Yeah.
The same is true with JROTC, which is one of the things we are looking at, because the number of programs tend to be in our area, and the Army and all the services are looking to expand in other parts of the country, again, because the only presence that those communities might see is a JROTC program. So it's a challenge to get them there, because you have to have veterans that want to go there to teach the program.
Right.
And so it's, again, if you're from the South or from the whatever city you're from, you tend to go back to that.
So it's kind of self-reinforcing then.
That's right. That's right. So,
And this is, I guess, this is a great place to start with your history and entering the military, because ROTC brought you to the U.S. Army.
It did. I am so blessed, and I'm going to mention this in my remarks next coming up.
Right.
That I was so blessed in JROTC. I was a young I was 13 years old, went to Shaw High School here in Mobile County, had a great role model in my father, who had served in the United States Air Force as an enlisted man. He came here to South Alabama as a young professor after he used a GI Bill. It's a big influence to me, obviously, but I was a very shy individual in high school. And then I met Thomas O. Rutherford, First Sergeant Thomas O. Rutherford, who was my instructor there. And he saw something in me that I probably didn't see in myself at that time, and helped bring out in me some self-confidence to be able to be leading in the front of a group, which is challenging for a young 13-year-old. And he, again, led me on a path that allowed me to receive a 4-year scholarship to the University of South Alabama with the Army ROTC program, so I went through school free. Thought I was going to go on to be an attorney, serve 4 years active duty, and come out and go to Alabama Law School.
Right.
But I
like
it.
What happened, Lieutenant Colonel?
My wife still asks me that question. You know, when are you going to go to law school? But I had a chance to serve with the 82nd Airborne Division and realize I love what we're doing here and the difference we're making for the country. That was a very high-spirited unit that you may know a little bit about, a very historic unit. And the privilege of serving with those group of soldiers really inspired me to want to stay, and I did. So
And then your career was lengthy.
22 and a half years, and was blessed, though, to come back. I had a chance. There's an individual also a lot to, Lieutenant Colonel Bill May, who was the Director of Army Instruction, not my immediate past predecessor, but the one prior to that.
Okay.
And he invited me while I was at the 82nd to come and speak to some students here. And I got back and said, you know, this might be something at the end of my career that I would like to do. And so I transitioned straight out of the Army. I was serving at Maxwell Air Force Base, working in a joint billet there with the Air Force War College, and rolled straight into LaFleur High School in Mobile, in North Mobile, and loved it, absolutely loved it, and stayed with it. Always with the in the back of my mind that I want to give back and do what First Sergeant Rutherford did for me.
I got you.
And that was a big motivation.
That's that full circle, yeah.
It's that full circle of life, so and I am so blessed to have had that opportunity. And that my family was able to travel with me throughout my military career and so forth. And then to come back home, my wife is from this area as well. So I'm a very, very blessed guy. I have nothing but good things to say about the way my life has gone.
I want to talk about how that life has gone. And we're going to come back to JROTC and the programs here in Mobile County. But I want to lay this out. So 1979, you were commissioned in 79. Y'all, the list of superlatives, honest to goodness, is incredible. But your education, like you, if the Army offered it, I kind of look, it looks like in reading through, you did it. I mean, you're talking about the 82nd and all that, but Air Defense Officer Basic Course, Air Defense Artillery Advanced Course, Combined Arms and Service Staff School, Instructor Training Course, Command and General Staff College, Joint Professional Military Education, Joint Doctrine Air Campaign. Just a few of the things you educated yourself on and what the Army does, right?
The one thing that... perhaps our civilian counterparts don't realize is that professional development within the military is at a it's expected, and we're provided those opportunities as we go through a career, and that's not only at the officer level, but it's all throughout the enlisted ranks as well. So that makes our services different than what we might see, for example, in Russia today. Their enlisted force is not. Does not receive that professional development.
Right.
They are not
expected.
I'm
sure the conscripts from the Asian areas don't.
Yeah. Even with their senior non-commissioned officer corps, they're not allowed to have initiative. They're not allowed to have that drive and understand the full mission and execution. We have it from the bottom up. Every soldier, every airman, every sailor and Marine knows what the mission is. And the same with the Coast Guard, now their Space Force. So
right.
that makes us a very professional organization, and I was proud to be a part of that.
Yeah, and gosh, I'm going to have to get you back to talk about this because you mentioned the situation with Russia and
right.
how they fight different on the battlefield than we do. And, you know, being able to – maybe Ukrainians are fighting more like with American
they
ideas and showing some success there. So, hey, let's put something in the calendar. Okay. You're coming back to talk with me about that. But you do this, you're spending time in Germany. And talk about you're in Germany in the 1980s. It's a different thing. The younger people, the people you work with JROTC, don't know what Germany and divided Germany was and Europe at that time.
It was pretty frisky. The Cold
frisky.
War was...
Listen to this warrior, he's frisky.
was really ramping up pretty hard. If you remember, Ronald Reagan had come into office. And he really pushed the Soviet Union very, very hard on the military buildup. He really ensured that we were capable of defending Western Europe, and we would have won had we...
For a second, put in perspective for younger people, y'all weren't just training to train. Y'all were training with the idea that the Soviets would come rolling west through, I forget the gap there.
Fold a gap.
There you go. Of course, this man knows it. In a conventional land war right there between two superpowers, right?
Yes, and that was a very, very dangerous time. And to Ronald Reagan's credit and all the military forces that served in that capacity at the time, you know, we held the line. And ultimately, the Soviet Union collapsed. Form of government collapsed for them. Sadly, it sort of reinvigorated itself under President Putin, who's a very dangerous individual. But I have to give the credit to the soldiers. And that was post-Vietnam. So it brought us out of the doldrum of the Vietnam era because there was so much pushback from the civilians about that fight. But beginning in the 80s up through the rest of my career, we were... And then, of course, we saw the result in the Iraq War in 1990 and 91 that the military forces have become extremely professional again under a volunteer army. and or volunteer, all volunteer force. So I was proud to be a part of that process in Germany at the time. I was in a missile unit there, and we were on a constant status. And so you would get along the border, they would jam with their airplanes and so forth against us in the prep. So it was a fairly dicey period of time, and glad that it turned out like it did, because it could have been ugly. And Germany, of course, reunited as a result of that. And now we have all of these countries that were under the thumb. And let's not forget that Russia holds people under the thumb.
That's right.
And those countries are now free, most of them, and they're NATO partners in many cases. And that's a good thing, because they recognize that democracy is a very precious thing, and they're living up to those standards. Communism, for anybody that thinks differently, for anybody that thinks a socialism or a communist way is a way to live, they have no idea what they're asking for. It would not be a pretty thing for America to be under that sort of a regime.
Yeah, traveling to other places helps people understand that more.
I wish most Americans could go and see some of the things that I've seen in our current group of veterans that have served in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria. They've seen the ugliest part of what the world can be. And we forget that, how blessed we are in this country. Even the poorest among us has it very good in comparison to other individuals that literally fight every single day just to survive. And so that's something we should never forget.
Dude, that's one of the things that you talk about, this disconnect, and we're going to get back to it, with only 1% of Americans serving and all that, that the state of safety we live in here is this, you know, I often say, like two magnets pushing against each other, right? They're repelling each other. If you take one away, the other one comes forward, or turn it around,
right?
It comes forward. But if you don't know that that exists, you don't know why this current, you know, PAX is here, then maybe you have no perspective what it took to get us here or continue to keep us in this place.
Well, to be honest, I think the media has played a part of that as well,
mm-hmm.
and failing to help educate and give a balanced view of what the real world is like, and how, again, how blessed we are as a country, and what's important, you know, the values of this country, which are under assault, as we know, by different factions in the community that question the wisdom of the founding fathers, for example. And it always bothers me, because you're not putting things in historical perspective, is that we're that group of individuals, were they perfect? Absolutely not. And, you know, I taught at John L. LaFleur High School with these young, predominantly African-American students, and would always stress to them, you know, where in the Constitution was, for example, slavery legal? We're going to point that out, because it was.
Yeah.
You know, with that three-fifths rule, that definitely was pertaining to those young men, to those poor individuals that had to live under that slavery. But as we grew as a country, we recognized that was a problem. And eventually, hundreds of thousands of Americans died to end it. And so by keeping that in perspective and see where we are now in comparison, we can't forget that part and only say how bad it was. Well, yes, but America did grow out of that. And again, in the big perspective, we have a voice as in a democracy, in this great republic of ours, that we can get to change as individuals, because the individual is what's respected here, not the group think. And sadly, there are people that are looking more toward that group thing. That bothers me as a grandparent now.
Right.
I've got four grandchildren that I love dearly, but I worry sometimes about, are they not getting the full story? Are they not understanding how this experiment called America, the United States of America, came to be? And if we lose that perspective, you can go away. I think Ronald Reagan talked about that. You know, we're only one generation away from losing this, what we believe in as a country. And, you know, when teaching with my students, I loved all my former students there at John L. LaFleur High School. It was such a rewarding experience for me. But one thing I'd always share with them is, you know, the big superpower in the 1900s was Great Britain. Today, Great Britain is really a small player in the grand scheme of things when you look at it. So don't think that this experiment called the United States of America can't go away. It can, if we're not vigilant, if we don't continue to have that 1% to serve, and that we stay united as a people. And we're on that cusp right now of defining who we are going to be as a people in the next 20 to 30 years. And I hope that we come back together like we should.
More from my conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Frank Barrow, the 2022 South Alabama Veterans Council Veteran of the Year, when we return on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
is just joining us, talking to Veteran of the Year, South Alabama Veterans Council, Lieutenant Colonel Frank Barrow. I want to, you bring something up, and how do we navigate that in the beauty of our republic, of the individual liberty built to protect the individual, when we are faced with, well, governments that don't believe in the individual? We can talk about China specifically. Oh, yeah. How we continue to keep that thing that makes us great, that individual liberty, but we still have to work against groups that they have an advantage because of their 10-year plans or 20-year plans, or not turning over who's in charge, and, you know, it just stays in one, and not having to deal with dissent or disagreement. Well, they deal with it, but it's a different thing. How do we continue to be Americans and keep the things that make us so great at the same time? When I say words here, people don't like win against our enemies, because I think enemies are a real thing.
You better win against your enemies, because if you don't, they will be victorious.
Correct.
And that's the part that we tend to forget, because we do have it so good in our day-to-day lives. That, to me, the big player in this that's missing right now is the media has got to do a better job of being more objective and avoiding a political slant. And we know, for example, and anybody that might, if you disagree with me, fine.
Right.
But my opinion is that the majority of our big media companies have fallen into a very left perspective of America.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good. That shouldn't be the role. I would rather them be more objective and challenge every political
Correct.
Leader and to challenge every thought. And instead, both on the right and the left, we're getting more of a battle. And our young people don't have the historical depth to understand it. And now we're getting into these political camps, and that's very dangerous. And it is exactly what China wants. It's exactly what President Putin wants to see, is that division. And because we're focused on battling with each other, we're losing perspective of what's going on in the real world. Federal government should be focused, number one, on the security of this country. And I think we've gotten so involved from the federal level, involved in internal politics, more so than we should be, that we're losing focus on the big picture out there. And it's, again, as a grandparent, you get a little wiser to all this gray you mm-hmm. see in my head. it causes me concern about that. Now, I'm not going to say that right now this is the toughest situation we've ever been in. No.
Right.
People in the Great Depression, that was tough.
Oh, I think this is the best time to be alive right now.
That's
like
right.
For medicine and technology and all those things.
All right? These great things.
Yeah.
World War II is not broken out. We're not going through that difficult period.
Knock on wood.
And so, but we've got to be certain that the media is real good about dividing us, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we all have more in common than we do differences. And we ought to be smart enough to allow differences. That's what makes America great.
Right.
And embrace each other nonetheless. And that's the part where we failed in that a little bit, I believe. And it's unfortunate, but I think we'll get back on track. You know, I worked yesterday with some young people that the University of South Alabama invited me out to work with their students to do some rappel training. I'm, as an old
yeah,
guy,
so I'm by the way, I get a text from Lieutenant Colonel yesterday. He said, I just finished up rappel training. It's a grandfather who's rappelling.
Yeah. Well, I'm a rappel master, and we recently trained their cadre to do some things. And so they asked me. I made me feel pretty good.
I got some Boy Scouts I would bring to you then. So, okay.
You're welcome to do that. But so we were there. But these young cadets that are going through the program there at South, these are dedicated young people. And it makes you know, they're 18 to 22 years old. In some cases, they're a little older. They may be already veterans from the active duty, and they're coming in to get a commission. Fantastic to see. And so anybody that says that we don't have some great young people out there is mistaken.
Agreed.
Are they different? Yes. Are they tech savvy? Yes. And those are things that we have to get better at as a grandparent. I need to get smarter on how those things work. But we can't lose faith in our young people, because if we do, they're going to find a different
–
they're going to discount what our opinions might be. So America's still in very, very good shape in that regard, in terms of patriotism, in terms of value added to the nation. We just have to make sure that on the broader picture that we, instead of all of this discouraging speak, that we look at what the positive things are that's going on in America. And there are some good things. Now, are there some serious issues that need to be addressed? Yes. And I hope that our politicians are able to get to and resolve some of those.
I want to get into talk about JROTC and those programs. But first, this is just like a side question. like rappelling, for example, mm-hmm. in training, how many of the, and I don't need the exact percentage, although your man as a lieutenant colonel probably can provide them, how many of those exercises, for lack of a better term, you can correct that, that y'all are doing are about doing the thing? Let's look at rappelling, for example. You know, we train that with scouts and this, right. But how much of that is about having that skill set, you know, to be able to rappel down? And I mean, obviously there's tactically, I could see how, and how much of it is, are you teaching something else at the same time?
Well, the big thing for us, particularly in JRTC, but really is even in the Army, it is that you're going to develop trust in equipment. You're going to develop an ability to overcome a natural fear, because rappelling is it's an unnatural thing to do.
Right.
And that's particularly important for our military members, that if you can overcome that fear, then if you're in a combat or a difficult training circumstance, when things are tough, and they have to be, we train very, very hard, that you're able to think rationally in that position. And so rappelling does that for us. And
so you're learning the skill set, but there's also, it sounds like there's an undercurrent of, you're learning other things at the same time.
I really think that's the more important aspect of it.
Yeah.
Rappelling, you're down the tower in just a matter of seconds. It's the long term. Okay. I have kids that I taught at LaFleur, and we rappel. I've rappelled with students for all the time I've been in JRTC. They come up, and the one thing they'll remember is, hey, Colonel Bear, I remember when you, they always claim I pushed them off the tower. I always tell them I gave them positive guidance in a rearward fashion and kept them moving. But, and they remembered it, though. And I even had a gentleman, a young man, the other day, I bumped. If I walk around town, people will go, hey, Colonel Bear, how you doing? And that's always nice to me.
I was going to say, that's got to feel good.
It's a great feeling. But we sat down and said, come on, let's have lunch together. We were at Burger King together. And he said, you know something? He said, the one thing that helped me a lot in my job right now, he works for, I think it's Mediacom.
Okay.
He says, is that rappelling? He said, I'm constantly on top of towers and things like that, or roofs.
Right.
And that I said, well, that's great. That helped. Again, it overcame a fear. And there's fear all throughout life. Every time we mature or matriculate into another environment, there's going to be that fear. But if you can remember that lesson, that if you think objectively, think rationally, and look at the whatever's involved, whether it's equipment or people involved, you got to trust that and then move forward. That makes me feel pretty good that we do that.
You know, and it kind of brings up, kind of ripped from today's headlines, discussion about training. And there's, you know, there was kind of a high-profile case of a sailor who died at Buds, you know, in SEAL training.
Right.
And listened to some discussions and reading on this idea of, and that is at an extreme level, but that how can we do this? How can we train at this level? But you said something. I mean, if you're going to be able to deal, what y'all do is combat. The job of U.S. military is to protect us from people who want to hurt us, right?
That's exactly
it's combat.
Right.
That is war. That is violence. That is combat. That is mayhem.
That you hope you never see.
You hope you never see, but you right. have to train to that standard. So what if we start saying, well, this training may be too much for today, and this training's like, this is too aggressive. Your thoughts on that?
I think it's important that we maintain very high standards because of the nature of what we do. There's always the prospect of serious injury or death, and we see that you see individuals on the television all the time that had a training accident. But it still requires that level of intensity because, again, getting to the nature, when you have to execute that battle plan or that battle training in a real circumstance, if you're not trained to that level, you will certainly fail. And again, I go back to that's what has made America so strong. We have things like the National Training Center out in California, very realistic combat training. In fact, on my rotation, we lost two soldiers during that event.
Wow.
And it's because the inherent nature of military training is dangerous.
Because there's no other way to train for it, right? I mean, I'm a civilian saying it, but how else do you train for it without?
Well, you do mitigate to the best you can.
Sure.
But we are human beings. Either human error or sometimes equipment failure happens, and that's just the reality of life. So we don't want to. We want to mitigate to the best we can, but we can't lower our standards without risking ultimately on the battlefield that someone that you lose an entire unit because you didn't train them hard enough. And that's so.
Wouldn't you argue that you're doing them a disservice if you don't train them to that level and then put them into the battlefield?
I would say you are absolutely criminally liable if you don't do that. And it is that way.
Well, your perspective as a lieutenant colonel who served our country for this many years is the perspective I want. That's what
well,
I was
very fortunate in my career. Now, I served with high-speed units, 82nd Airborne Division, but I didn't ever have to go to combat. I'll tell you this, though. We trained very, very hard.
The 82nd. I got a buddy that's in 82nd as well. Y'all trained very hard because it's a damn dangerous job.
Right, when you're jumping out of an airplane at 2 o'clock in the morning over some drop zone.
With bad guys down there.
Right.
You got to get to the ground first, right? Yeah, Colonel, so. And then you've got, and on the ground, right. There's people who don't want you there.
That's correct. So
it's a pretty tough job.
We trained pretty hard, and again, I was blessed to be a part of that and proud of that service. So, yeah.
Let's talk about JROTC as we have here. Do you see challenge? Is the pipeline, you said these young people, there's great young people, and I agree. People like to talk about millennials. Oh, all those millennials. I know many millennials, one of them works for me here, that are top shelf, great people. Do you see, so those great individuals are there, but is the pipeline coming into that system, is it being reduced? Is it harder, or is it the same as ever?
Well, I'll put it like this. You have an individual you just said that works for you.
Yes.
But I'll bet you money you didn't lower your expectations
negative
for that individual.
Right.
I think in America today, because we say, well, you know, this new generation, we're lowering expectations, which is that's the worst thing you can do. Maintain high expectations, because they will reach that if you give them the opportunity, and also give them the opportunity, make conditions such that they can meet with success.
Help the person reach the higher.
And we've all benefited from that. I've had mentors throughout my life. But going back to the, there is a concern in America today, and it's a legitimate one, is that because the nature of society, we've gotten so much involved with technical equipment and inside games and those types of things. America, we've gotten less fit, and there are a lot more medical issues that young people face. So only about 25% of Americans that are coming out of high school are even eligible to serve based on their health status.
But would that have been in 79 when you were in? What do you think that number was?
I think it was probably closer to 50 or 60.
Yeah, I think so. I think the stats bear that out.
We were outside more. We did more physical things. I mean, I don't ever remember staying in the house. Either my dad was cracking on me to get something done that I needed to get done, and he was right.
Yeah.
Or you were out playing with your buddies doing something.
Goofing off. Right? Yeah.
It
wasn't like going to a gym, just the natural whatever you were doing.
It was a natural. Yeah. That's right. And so that part has changed significantly, and I think the diet of America has changed. One thing we've become addicted to fast food. Mm-hmm. We've become addicted to candy bars and all this kind of thing, or chips. Not that I love those things.
Right.
But it's all got to be done in moderation.
Everything in moderation.
And sadly, even with my students, I have to say far too many of them had diets that weren't, even though we teach classes to teach better diet and so forth. But, not as many moms and dads cook at home as like we used to do. My mother had a meal for us every night. And
right.
It was usually healthy because we didn't have a lot of money. My dad was fairly poor as a young man, beginning at South. I've seen his pay stubs from back then. It wasn't a whole lot of money.
Right.
We never knew we were poor. I mean, we were kids.
I don't know that any of us did.
But my mother always had a hot meal made with fresh vegetables and fresh meat and those kind of things, or bread.
Right.
And not a lot of luxury items. My dad would not stop at a McDonald's for nothing. We would buy, you remember these Cokes, the quick check sodas that were a dime a can?
Yeah, yeah.
You were lucky to get one of those. So
right.
It was either water or Kool-Aid that we used to drink. So.
Yeah, and what you're talking about, Colonel, though, is that was the responsibility of the household. Because I think as a child, I grew up in the 80s. If those things would have been available, all the super fatty foods and all that stuff, I'd have eaten them if they were there. I didn't have that option.
That's right.
So
we've got to do a better job educating our young parents that you've got to feed your children proper nutrition and encourage. It doesn't take much to see that how large we've gotten as a people and not in a healthy way.
Right.
Just go to any store that you see. And it's sad because life, if you're a 20-year-old and you're 50, 60 pounds overweight and you're already hurting your knees and joints, I'm 63.
In your 20s, you're like that.
Wow. And you're that way. Life is going to be very hard for you when you get to 40s and 50s and, heaven forbid, 60s. You're going to be absolutely miserable. And that's the part I don't think they're connecting that dot. Some degree of physical activity is going to keep you healthier for a long term and make you happier as an individual. And a lot of folks are going to suffer here in a few years.
Well, let's take those things to heart. Let's also, people listening out there, keep this idea of introducing the idea of JROTC or something to somebody in your household that might be right, that this may be something that is perfect for that young man or young woman.
Well, a lot of parents are suspicious that we are here to recruit their children into the military, and we are absolutely forbidden from doing that, actually. In our mission statement, it says that you are not a recruiter. That's right. To us. But let me tell you something. In this district, in Mobile County, we've done some great things, and I'm particularly proud of the cadre I have and the support I have from my district. We've introduced, I'm big into workforce development. We've introduced STEM into our curriculum. We have, in JROTC, we have the only robotics teams with using VEX robotics at the high school level in Mobile County. We introduced this week drones, and we have a competitive drone competition, and all 12 high schools are going to have to participate that have JROTC programs in that program because I'm directing it that way.
Gotcha.
Because the state of Alabama gave every JROTC program, and I'm proud of our state for this, $5,000 to invest into drone or robotics technology or cybersecurity, causing us to prepare these students for a real opportunity in workforce. These kids need to be shown. Mobile, Alabama has more jobs than anywhere else in the country. Austell USA, Airbus, ST Aerospace Engineering, Alabama Power, all these individuals are looking for skilled labor positions that involve STEM to a degree. You need to know math and some physics and those kind of things. But if our kids are given those opportunities, they can benefit from it and live the American dream.
Right, and jobs that pay the kind of money you can raise a family on.
Right. There's a big debate in America, well, the jobs today don't pay a fair wage. Well, there are jobs that pay.
Yeah, we got quite a few around here.
But you can't go to school and blow off your education. The most critical years for a student as a young adult are those 4 years in high school. And that's because at the end of that journey, when they're 18 and they have a diploma, or even if they dropped out of school, you're done. America no longer owes you anything.
Right.
A public education, though, is by law. You are going to have the opportunity for a public education. And they've got to take advantage of that. And JROTC, I promise you, will give a leg up to any student. And we take them, it doesn't matter. You can be a student with a special need. You can be the valedictorian. You can be an athlete and everything in between. You can be in the band and still take JROTC and have a wonderful time, because we have a niche for everybody. I told you about the VEX robotics. I told you about the drones. We have archery. We have air rifle competition, which is based on the Olympic sport of air rifle. We have Scholars Bowl. We have traditional military things like a Raider team for physically fit kids that really want to push themselves pretty hard. So all of these great opportunities are there. And we just have the class. We have a world-class curriculum. Our curriculum is as good as anything else that any core subject area is teaching. It's that well. I give the military services credit for developing an excellent, well-researched, well-developed curriculum that's very broad-based, that helps kids get ready to be employed in the workforce if they want to go there or to go to college, either one. And so if you come into us, we can help you set up for success. So.
There's a lot of people just heard that didn't realize the breadth of JROTC and all the things going on inside that. You probably opened some, you opened some eyes.
Well, Colonel, we started here just to share with our audience. A few years ago, I had the chance to go to Mississippi State University. I have a counterpart named Paul Willis, Colonel Paul Willis from Jackson, Mississippi. Now, Jackson, Mississippi is a very poor school district. Mm-hmm. He started something at Mississippi State University. He said, bring some of your students to this. And it was a STEM, a week-long resident academy on a campus where they stayed on that campus at Mississippi State. I was so impressed with that. I came back and told Miss Martha Peake at the time, I said, ma'am, I'd like to pursue this. And she smiled and said, you run with that as hard as you can. If you can find the money, we're going to back you and do that. And so it took me a couple of years to find money.
Right.
But we had people in this community who contributed to that, and as well as from the district, as well as from the Army. And we kicked off our first one. After a couple of years, we received $1 million grant from the National Science Foundation to continue that work. And we are now on the college campus of Spring Hill College for a week, for 6 days, 5 nights. And this past year, we received a $6 million grant to continue that work, but to replicate it at 10 different districts across America. This is Mobile, Alabama's being replicated, our model.
I love it.
This coming summer, San Diego's Unified School District, San Diego, California, everybody thinks of San Diego, or you know, right. California's got it going on. They're replicating our model in San Diego. Atlanta Public School System, and also Pike County, Alabama, They're the first three replication sites. So we're very excited about that.
I'm proud that y'all, I'm proud of you.
Well, and what we do with that is it's got a very difficult STEM challenge throughout the week.
Right.
And it's related to three different themes. We either look at maritime careers. Mobile has a lot of that.
We got a little bit of that, yeah.
Aviation careers. We got that. We're rich in that. And advanced manufacturing, also rich in that. So we rotate through those three themes to keep it fresh for the students. But I'm very delighted, again, that JROTC is helping young people see opportunities that exist. Because if we don't make a connection between school and what that leads to, it can't be just about learning math for the sake of math or reading for the sake of reading. It's got to be, what does this lead to so that you're a productive citizen? Because every generation depends on a new set of productive citizens in this great thing we call the United States of America to be out there and do their thing. And so we're making a difference in that regard, and I'm real proud of the work that my team has done and the support from our district and the state and the federal side. It's been a win-win for everybody.
Your dedication to service to our country throughout your career is an amazing thing, and it's why today we're talking about this. Veteran of the Year, Colonel Frank Barrow. It's a pleasure to have talked with you. I've got about 10 things on my list. I'm going to have to get you back in on the show, and we'll talk about that as well. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being who you are in your service to our nation.
I'm indebted to a lot of people whose shoulders I've been able to stand on, but thank you for having me here today, and thanks to the great community we live in.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
What a great conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Frank Barrow, Veteran of the Year 2022, as awarded by the South Alabama Veterans Council. More of our conversation with veterans when we come back from the news. We are live at Fort Whiting for the Veteran of the Year presentation, and a lot that goes on with that, the luncheon honoring all the veterans out here. Once again, this is going on until 2 o'clock today, but we'll get some more veterans to join us in the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit to have those discussions when we return. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.